It's time to talk about the outdoors in South Alabama. Hunting, fishing, and getting outside along the Great Gulf Coast. It's time to take it outside with FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. With reports, stories, how-to information, and Dr. Bill's Marine Forecast. Here's Sean Sullivan and Mike Ward.
And welcome in. FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. Glad to have you all along on this Saturday. Remember, check us out online as well, fmtalk1065.com and fmtalk1065 Outdoors on Facebook. Mike is out this week, but it's all right because I got a real treat for us this week and a guy I've been looking forward to talking to for quite a while, as I'm a big fan. Grand National Senior Open Division Turkey Calling Champion, also a man who has killed a turkey in 49 states. And not only one of the best hunters, not just callers, best hunters I've ever watched, a man who puts out super entertaining videos, great turkey hunting content, true to life, but incredibly entertaining, and a guy that I think we can all get around watching his take on turkey hunting. And really, as I look at my notes here, really the guy I wish I was. Ladies and gentlemen, Dave Owens from the Pinhoti Project joining us now. Hey, Dave.
Hey there, how are you?
I'm good, man, and thanks for checking in with us, because I know it is an understatement to say you have a busy schedule during the, you know, most of us will talk about back here in Alabama, well, the 40-something days of turkey season. That's how many days for you? When do you start? When do you wrap up?
We always start first weekend in March in South Florida. So then this year it actually started a weekend before, because I was able to get down there and get in the youth season. I was able to take a young guy out on the weekend before the actual opener, so it started on February 23rd this year, I think it was, 22nd or 23rd, and we'll go all the way till this year. We're planning to stop. Our last day will be May 31st, so I'm looking at hunting close to 90 days this spring. So
it's a dream for a lot of people to think about that, but I've watched enough of your videos to also realize, you know, we dream about it, but it's a grind too. I see it in your eyes, man, when you're taking the videos before you head in the morning. I can see that, hey, I've slept 3 hours look in your eyes.
Oh yeah. 3 hours is usually, a very welcome surprise, because it's sometimes often less than that. So, but yeah, it's definitely a grind. It's a discipline. A lot of days I wish I could say no to it so I could catch up a little bit on some sleep, but unfortunately, the way I'm wired, missing a sunrise during the spring is, it's not an option.
Yeah, and I watch that, and I think people will pick that up when they check out the Pinhoti Project over at YouTube or go to your website, because you're not out there just on those perfect days. I've watched you hunt a lot of stuff that I said, it might have been a lot of people just stay in bed that day.
Absolutely. We hunt rain or shine. So we, wind, rain, whatever it may be, I'm going to be out there, because may not kill him that day, but I could definitely learn something learn something about him that day that could put another piece of the puzzle together.
I tell you what, if it's deer hunting or fishing, any pursuit like that, the folks I know that are at the top of their game say the same thing. You say it, you know, about turkey hunting. Some of the best fishermen I know, even on days that it's not good, they're out there because they say, well, I may not catch many, but I'm going to learn something that day.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. You're definitely not going to learn something without going, so.
Well, it shows in what you're doing. And I want to talk about right now, you're on your way from Georgia, southern end over there, the Peach State, and you're coming back into our state here in Alabama. So what were you doing down in South Georgia?
Oh, man, I'll tell you what, it was a real treat. I spent the last week down here with a KT team. It's a nonprofit organization that helps disabled individuals who really have a tough time getting out, getting moving. Getting them outside, letting them enjoy turkey hunting, and just letting them enjoy the outdoors. And a lot of these guys, you get to see life in their eyes that you just have a sneaky suspicion hasn't been there in quite some time. And talking to their loved ones, especially these people that may have been, this disability may have, struck them, midway through life or something. They thought life was over, and they were never going to be able to do these type of things. And anyways, I've been down here for the last week helping. I don't want to say helping, because it was just as much a treat for me as it was for them. It was an eye-opening, humble experience that I was even asked to be a part of this team. But been down here, they had, a lot of hunters out, and had them on turkeys, and we were around turkeys. They got to hear turkeys gobble, and they just got to watch the sunrise. And it was a real treat. I've been down here enjoying the last week doing that stuff. So
if people want to find out more about that group online, they can do it through your website or your Instagram, or where would they go?
Yeah, I will be tagging a lot of their stuff on Instagram and stuff, but they have their own Instagram. It's just the letter K, the letter T, team, DKT team. They have their own website. You can go check them out. You can watch videos. They do more than just turkey hunting. You know, they do, they do hunting of all sorts, and they, you know, just outdoor activities, really. And it's, it's something to watch, and I hope that everybody can see, and hope it continues to grow for them.
All right,
for us.
And it's great. We'll link that through on ours as well here with FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. I'd be remiss as a turkey hunter, even though I'm not going to South Georgia. I got to know if I ever have a chance where birds are gobbling or not gobbling. So even though I'm not going to South Georgia, what were the birds doing down there?
Man, they were really, really finicky. Seemed like they were gobbling a little bit first light, and then they were clamming up. We were able to find some birds a little bit later in the day, 9:30, 10:30, that kind of stuff. But they did get with hens pretty quick and clam up. We did have a couple teams get out there and find cooperative turkeys too, though. So it's right there on the brink of being ready.
And that's interesting, because I think about South Georgia, and down here in South Alabama, we're on a similar latitude, and that kind of lays in with what we're seeing down here in the southwest part of the state. Now, you do more of your hunting in the northern part of the state, and gosh, you can take a drive from Mobile to Scottsboro and watch it go from seemingly mid or late spring to early spring just in our state. So it's maybe be a little bit different as you go north. Or what do you think? What are you hearing?
Yeah, absolutely. Where I hunt, for the most part, it was kind of very similar. I left North Alabama, and we were hearing some birds right off the roost, but it just felt like everything was fixing to start clicking. It felt like at any day now, you know, they could bust loose, and the turkeys were going to be in the frame of mind that you wanted them to be in. But I got down here and then found almost identical situation. So.
Now, you were into birds before you left. If I got my timeline right, didn't I see you and your dad with a picture with the turkey?
Yeah, we were lucked into a couple turkeys that first week of the season there in Alabama. But it wasn't because they were just overly cooperative. It was just kind of more of learning what they're doing and getting in their way kind of thing.
Well, yeah, I want to talk about that part, too, as we continue, because the woodsmanship skills show just like your calling skills show, and that's a lot of it. We're going to come back from the break. More with Dave Owens. It's the Pinhoti Project. You can go check it out online, Instagram as well. Put that link up for you. This guy is a phenom, and the content he's putting out is really top shelf. If you're a real turkey hunter, this is the stuff. This is as true to real life as I've ever seen out there. Except I can't call anything like he can. All right, we're coming right back. All right, welcome back. FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. Glad to have you along, and great to have our guest this morning. So much to talk about with Dave Owens from the Pinhoti Project, which, by the way, as one of the coolest brands in all turkey hunting, this man's got it. I remember seeing that trail logo as a Boy Scout hiking the Pinhoti Trail and seeing the Turkey Track logo and seeing, I said, well, that's really cool. But it wasn't until decades later that somebody put it in to words and said, Pinhoti means what in Creek, Dave?
It means turkey home.
Can't beat that. Creek, yeah, Indians,
exactly. Right? people. Obviously, outside of Alabama, basically, and in Georgia, everybody's like, what in the heck does that mean? Like, where did that word come from? That's so foreign to everybody. It's really cool to watch that word almost become popular, at least in the turkey hunting circle, due to some silly fella taking a video camera and documenting a turkey hunt.
I love it, man. It makes me so happy to see it that way and grow. And let's talk about that, because before we went to the break, talking about your dad and that turkey that you killed before you went down to South Georgia. Talk to me about how you got into turkey hunting. I mean, when did you start, and was it your dad carrying you, or how'd that happen?
I started hunting because of my dad. My dad's a fanatical deer hunter, always has been, still is to this day. I didn't know any turkey hunters. There was no turkey hunters around. There was always rumor of a couple guys turkey hunting, but I never had anybody take me. I don't really have an explanation for why I got into turkey hunting, but I did. And just learned through VHS cassettes, you know, and reading in magazines and getting out there and making a bunch of mistakes. So I'm kind of self-taught. Does that go, you know, as far as how did you become a turkey hunter? It's just, you know, it was just building blocks on all the mistakes I made, trial and error, which is a much slower process when it comes to learning something. But I do feel like it's the best way of becoming proficient at something. It is making all the mistakes you possibly can. So.
No, I'll second that. And I also think it, with exceptions, I know there's exceptions out there, people that, you know, were sitting in the blind at 2 years old. But to me, when you're self-taught, same thing in my family. My dad had turkey hunted sometime before I was ever around. But there's something about teaching it to yourself and going that I think builds a fire, where I saw some of the guys that got to go early in their lives, their fire has died out some. But the guys, my friend group that all kind of taught ourselves, we're all still hardcore and we're in our late 40s. So.
Oh yeah,
yeah. It's something about that. Let's talk about you, the VHS, and watching that. How do you go from that, and just getting into turkey hunting, to being a person that sounds more like a turkey and more like a owl than the actual critters?
it's just something I had a knack for, as I could hear any kind of animal, really, and just replicated at least, and it'd usually be close. Don't know how. Don't know why. It's just something I've always been able to do. And, you know, I just, turkey hunting just took a head, you know, it just grabbed me, you know, somewhere deep, and it's just always been something that's super, super important for me. I wanted to be good at it. It didn't take me long when I started this to think that, you know, this is my thing. You know, this is, you know, everybody's got their thing, something that makes them happy. And this was my thing. The turkey calling thing came in much later. But still, to this day, I do not advertise myself as a turkey caller. I don't want people to think of me as a competition turkey caller. I'm a turkey hunter through and through from the foundation up. And it just grabbed me. I wanted to learn more about turkeys. I wanted to learn about hunting turkeys. I wanted to learn about what they liked, where they wanted to be, and just to be more proficient at hunting them and being close to them. That's just kind of, you know, the fire was lit, and like you just stated, once you build a, you know, you build a foundation using your own bricks per se, it seems to be a little bit more solid and something that you can't get tired of.
Well said. And I wanted to kind of get into talk of calls and all that, but we'll do that later, because you're touching on something that I think is important. When people watch you and watch your videos, they'll see this. While you are, and we'll get back to it, you're, if not the best, one of the best callers I have ever heard. But at the same time, when you call, when you don't call, and your woodsmanship, I think, kills you a lot of turkeys, man, watching you. Just knowing the ground, moving when it's right, not moving when it's wrong.
Yeah, absolutely, and that'll always kill more turkeys, in my opinion. Being a big caller like I am, everybody expects me to talk about how important calling is, but at not one time have I ever said calling is the most important part of that puzzle. There's a lot of parts to the turkey hunting puzzle, and being proficient at all of them is the best recipe, always will be. But calling is, you know, maybe 10% of that whole game. Don't get me wrong. It is, the more proficient you are on a call, being able to replicate turkeys and then knowing when to employ each of those calls that they do there is very important. But it's just one of those many pieces.
Yeah, and I'm going to get back into calling here in just a little bit. I do want to talk to you about when you're hunting. Obviously, when you, it's a real tough thing to film yourself. You've got some sidekicks you run with, and y'all trade. One of y'all carries a gun. One of y'all carries a camera. I got to ask you about some of these Chubbs. What's the story with Chubbs?
Chubbs is just Chubbs. There's not much else you can say about Chubbs. He's a fanatical turkey hunter. Um, not the greatest cameraman of all time, but he will carry it sometimes, and he claims he gives it his best effort, but I think he always makes sure that he does it not that great, so he won't be asked to do it any more than he has to. But
you think he's sandbagging you? You think he's sandbagging you?
That's Chubbs. That's Chubbs. He's discreetly wise, you know. But yeah, you have you have Squirrel, who also fanatical turkey hunter. You know, he hunts off the Osceola, lives down there in South Florida. Met him down there on a piece of public land, and you know, it just friendship stems from there, and have traveled to many corners of the country with him hunting turkeys. You have, you know, Courtney, my girlfriend, that you'll see in quite a few of those episodes as well. She wasn't much of a turkey hunter when she met me. She hunted like crazy everything else. She was a big deer hunter and been a hunter her whole life. It's just turkeys, never been introduced to turkeys the way I do it anyways, or to the level that I do it. But now that she's got a taste of it, she advertises herself as a turkey hunter more than anything else. That's what she likes to do. So
She's pretty hardcore. When people watch this, and by the way, out of all your sidekicks, you have more Courtney. Nothing against Chubbs and Squirrel, but you know, when I saw her standing in water down in South Florida, hunt while y'all were in water while you were hunting, I said, that's somebody who's hardcore right there. She isn't just being put in a chair that was carried into a blind on the edge of a chufa patch. I mean, she's getting after it.
She's very adamant about, you know, don't you take it easy because I'm with you. And, you know, when it started off, you know, I was trying to ease her into this whole thing. But my thing has always been, if somebody wants it bad enough, they'll do it. And I'm not willing to hand turkeys off to somebody who don't want it. So if she didn't want to put in the work, then I didn't want her killing the turkey. So she's never skipped a beat. She crawls if she has to crawl, and she hunts in the rain and wind if she has to hunt in the rain and wind. And yeah, South Florida was wet this year, and she was standing in water. She got soaking wet, and she got cold. She got hot. You know, it was she's there for the long haul, no doubt about it.
Yeah, when people check out that episode with the others over on the YouTube page, you watch that gobbler come across the water, and then watch me shake my head when a bird back here in Alabama won't cross a gut or a slough to come to us. I'm like, what the heck?
Yeah, those birds are definitely a unique breed down there. They don't mind the water, and it still blows my mind to this day.
You'll watch.
What they'll do.
Yeah, I mean, and then you go. Somebody, they need to talk to our Alabama birds when they get hung up around water. Okay, let's talk about Osceolas for a second, because for a lot of us in Alabama, that is one of the closer and more doable subspecies. You know, if we're going to travel, that's probably the fastest. It is the fastest one to get to, and it has the most limited range too, right, Dave?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, you can only catch them in South Florida. Yeah.
And if you talk about them in the water, they're a little bit different. I look at them, they look, maybe I'm just putting on, they look rangier to me than a Eastern, maybe more leggy. Is that true?
Yeah, absolutely. They definitely have longer legs. You can lay the legs of an Osceola against the, legs of an Eastern, and they're going to be a few inches longer. Not to mention they're a lot thinner. They're a lot, their toes are thinner. They're just a smaller bird overall. They're a darker bird. They're more just like a fighting rooster almost. They're very, they're very wild. I mean, they're wild. They live in a wild place. They're hunted by everything. They live in very thick vegetation. They're comfortable maneuvering through super thick stuff that our birds back here at home would turn their back to. And like I said, you know, we just mentioned how much they live in water. They thrive in the water. On dry years when that water is drying up, you won't find turkeys unless you find water. You know, they live at the water's edge, so you really have to seek out the water. That's just the way they've adapted, and that's where they're comfortable. That's where they find their food. So they're really a unique bird that lives in, an extremely unique location.
What about hunting them? Now, you're talking about the habitats they're in and how tough that can be on the hunters where you're going after them. What about in the, that bird, I found a bird, a roost of a bird, I hear bird gobble on the limb, the chances of having him off my gun barrel, are they harder as a subspecies in Eastern, the same? Is there any way to put a measure to that?
Well, it's definitely the terrain that makes them difficult. You know, it's not the bird themselves. You know, a turkey's a turkey's a turkey, I guess. But it's definitely the terrain, the thick vegetation, the water you have to deal with, the alligators, you know.
Florida Panthers.
All that type of stuff.
Florida Panthers.
That people are afraid of. Yeah, the Panthers. There's quite a few Panthers down there, despite what they'll tell you. But, you know, you very rarely see them. So even if you're being hunted, at least you don't know it.
That one y'all were having, I don't know, watching one of your segments, y'all were having lunch or doing something, visiting after killing a turkey, I think, and the cat comes in behind y'all.
Yeah, absolutely. We were having our celebratory cigar, and we had a panther come right in behind us. Yeah, I don't know if it was just a coincidence or if he had smelled the turkey or what the situation was, but yeah, it was pretty cool. We've seen one this year. It was just on the road, though. I didn't get any footage of it, but they're a big cat.
it makes a bobcat seem like not a big issue back here at home. Let's talk about that. You mentioned it. It's just a couple questions now, so I'll jump to this one. What's the deal with the cigar smoking, Dave? I mean, I like it, but how'd that all come about? What'd you do? How'd this happen?
Well, I'll give credit to Chubbs on this. He and I guess some of the guys that he was when he became a turkey hunter, he had some guys that he hunted with, some older gentlemen that were really dyed-in-the-wool turkey hunters, and he kind of took him under his wing and kind of he was raised up hunting the mountains and stuff, and that's something that they did. And I'd grasped hold to it because I was bad about, you know, I was chasing this U.S. slam for a handful of years there, and it's bad about making you hurry through the whole process.
Mm-hmm.
And nobody loves a turkey, a wild turkey, more than I do. And a lot of times the day after or after the fact, I'll be, man, I wish I'd have slowed down and appreciated that turkey a little bit more than I did. And this is one of the ways that I make sure I slow down. I make sure I appreciate what he gave me. I appreciate the experience. I relive the experience. I give that full appreciation for everything that just took place, and the way, you know, smoking a cigar is a small way of just slowing down and making sure you don't rush through that process.
What a great message that is, and we all know, too, yeah, you're not rushing through a cigar, or you're going to be paying for it. All right, we're coming back from the break. More with Dave Owens from the Pinhoti Project. Check him out on Instagram and YouTube, Pinhoti Project website. Check out the episodes. Right now, a bunch of Osceola hunting, for those of us that daydream about that, is online now. Coming right back. More of FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. Back, FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. Glad to have you here on this Saturday, but y'all probably aren't maybe nearly as happy as I am to talk to Dave Owens with the Pinhoti Project. I'm a big, big fan, and it's good to talk turkeys with this man who is wrapping up a little bit of South Georgia hunting and heading back to, could I say that North Alabama, that's kind of home base for you, Dave?
North Alabama, North Georgia, I'm right there on the line, but yeah, that's home.
Which is, by the way, you watch that, and I realize you live in Georgia. I said, that's because y'all get, there's a week difference between the two seasons. So you add an extra week right there with the Georgia-Alabama thing.
Yeah, absolutely.
Unfair.
Yeah.
You already had,
they're pretty liberal limits and long seasons, so it's accommodating for a turkey hunter.
But that's not enough for you, Dave, because you're not only happy with Alabama and Georgia and Florida, you have killed a turkey in 49 states. Holy cow. What an accomplishment. And I'd love if we could sit down and smoke a cigar someday. I'd ask you about state by state. But to save you some time here, walk us through out of the 49, I mean, how you decided, first of all, that you were going to attempt this. How long did it take? And give us a couple stories about the hardest states to kill a turkey in.
Oh, I don't know what when I started it, there was only one other gentleman that I'd even heard of ever trying it. I didn't even know it was a thing. I'm not sure it was a thing. I'm not sure U.S. Slam was even a thing at that point. I thought it was just, hey, this guy killed a turkey and never stayed. But, yeah, I was a fanatical turkey hunter, and the Grand Slam was the thing that everybody was chasing, and I did that a few times, and did it in a single season a couple times, and it was just like, what do you do next? And what really gets, cranks my engine is hunting turkeys in unfamiliar places, unique habitats. I want to hunt turkeys and be able to figure them out in different environments. And I thought what better way of doing that is to, go to different states. I mean, that kind of makes you learn them and hunt them and find them in different habitats. Since obviously a lot of states will be similar, but, it's a lot of very, very different. So started checking those states off and deciding that I was going to try to do, I think my first number was like four. I wanted to make sure I did four new states every spring. And then, of course, that ended up going to 7 and 9 and 13 and 11 and, once the ball got rolling. So, I guess it kind of started that way.
Yeah, and you're having to figure out, that's what is interesting. I mean, if you go from, I've been lucky enough to hunt some up in Pennsylvania, and there's areas of Pennsylvania that, gosh, they look a lot like and hunt a good bit like areas of North Alabama. I mean, there's a lot of similarities, but I can't imagine that hunting in Alabama and hunting in, I don't know, give me a state, hunting somewhere like Wyoming would be very much the same.
Yeah, and in those states like Nevada and Arizona and, those are where things really get different.
Yeah, what is it out there? I mean, you and I were talking during the break there about bottlenecks, and those of us, even if they hadn't been turkey hunting, if they've been out west doing something, have seen that, whether it's around a ranching operation or somewhere there's water or something like that. Where there's turkeys, there's bunches of them, but they're not everywhere.
They're not everywhere, not by any stretch of the imagination. But yeah, a lot of times you got to find whatever that limiting factor is that they can't find everywhere, which is, out west in the desert, just water and big roosting trees. They got to have roosting trees. So that's what you're targeting that. And those are pretty scarce. So you have to, you have to learn to look for those, find those, food sources are, a little bit more vague, but that's kind of what you're looking for when it comes to, hunting on the east side or, favorable slopes and all of that type stuff. But out west, it's definitely a different ball game, and that's something when you decide to take on that challenge of U.S. Slam, you had to figure out which state, what the limiting factors are going to be, what areas are going to have everything that a turkey's going to need, that you really become proficient with that in order to be efficient with your time. Otherwise you can spend a week out there just looking for turkeys. So.
And that, one of the things a lot of people get, and I am one of them that would like to kill a slam, and they're thinking subspecies, but obviously you're thinking beyond that with the states and killing those same subspecies in different states. So break down for us, if you think there's any difference. You and I talked about a little bit about this off the air, is there any rancor in your mind, hardest to easiest subspecies, or are they all individuals, Dave? What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, they all have their unique challenges. We spoke about Osceolas. They're very limited. There's only one place you can hunt them in South Florida, or in central to South Florida, and the terrain makes them difficult to hunt, and the access to public land it can be kind of tricky. So you have that, but then you have states like you can hunt easterns in states like Delaware. It's not the turkeys that's difficult. It's just trying to get through their whole licensing process and get a permit. That's what's difficult about that. So it's not the turkey itself. So that state, those type of states, prevent you from going. As far as the turkeys themselves, turkeys are going to be turkeys regardless of where you're at. We talked about those limiting resources and being where turkeys are going to be is obviously the number one rule, and killing turkeys is you got to find them. But as far as, Miriams and Rios, they get that rap of being an easy bird to kill because they do gobble a lot.
Mm-hmm.
But, I've had them whip me just as bad as any old public land eastern turkey or Osceola turkey. I mean, they can all present their own challenges. Biggest challenge, like I've said many times with a Miriam turkey, is feeders over here on the east side, if a turkey gobbles at you, that's usually because you said something that piqued his interest. You know, you said something that he recognized.
Mm-hmm.
So therefore, you can kind of start putting a plan into effect there. But Miriam turkey will gobble at you regardless. And he could have no interest. He could be going the opposite way 100 miles an hour and gobble at you. And there's nothing more frustrating than getting the turkey to gobble, setting up, and then him either not gobbling again or him gobbling 200 yards further. So do that 4 or 5 times in a day, and you'll start thinking again about how easy these Miriams are supposed to be to kill, you know.
That's a great takeaway because, yeah, most of us would think, yeah, man, I'm hearing tons of gobbling. I'm on them. I'm doing something right. But you're saying that them gobbling at you doesn't mean anything.
Absolutely not. Absolutely not.
As you go through this U.S. slam, yeah, and can you hear me? I know we were dropping the signal a little bit there. Can you hear me?
I got you.
Okay, good, good. Yeah, absolutely. If you're just joining us, too, Dave Owens from the Pinhoti Project, our guest. As you go through the 49 states here in this slam, obviously one's missing, and that would be Alaska, right?
Yes.
Which tells me you killed a turkey in Hawaii?
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. We killed, that was a handful of years ago. But, yeah, Hawaii's a beautiful destination to turkey hunt.
I was trying to convince the family when we were out there, and they said, "No, we need you down here doing the surfing lessons with the family." I was telling them there are turkeys around. Yeah, I mean, so is there? How do you do it there? Is it on ranches, or is it is there public land to hunt? How do you hunt in Hawaii?
Yeah, there's a big ranch. Parker Ranch pretty much owns the big island, a lot of it, all the turkey hunting opportunities there on the island. But yeah, there's a lot of public land too. There's turkeys on public land, and that's what we did. We hunt turkeys on the public portion, and there's plenty of turkeys to hunt. They've got Rios over there. They don't have many predators. One of those super, super unique places to turkey hunt. You're hunting, a lot of times you're hunting like dormant volcanoes, and the turkeys there, they don't have many predators because they don't. We were roosting a tree that was probably 10 foot tall. That's the tallest tree they had to roost in, and they were all just gobbling like crazy up on that dead little snag. It's a really cool place to turkey hunt.
That is wild. And that you started that, you said, and you tried to do 4 states in the spring, and that grew to 9 and 11. So from the time you started to branch out to the time you got state 49, how many years did that take?
I think it took me 7 years from the year that I said I was going to start, making sure that I hit new states every year. I think it was 7 years start to finish.
Wow. All right. I said earlier we'd come back to Colin, and I love what you say about woodsmanship and being a hunter, because people can see it in your episodes. You absolutely are. But you're a fantastic caller, and I want to pick your brain on a couple things, because you hunt so much public land. And I was talking about it on last week's show, my inverse corollary of pressure, right? Generally, with exception, high pressure, barometric pressure, turkeys gobble better. Low barometric pressure, they gobble less. Hunter pressure, high hunter pressure, they gobble less. Low hunter pressure, they gobble more. So they're like an X on that graph.
Yep.
Let's talk about, you hunt so much public land that, those birds have gotten yelper whipped a lot of times before you get there. So how do you break that down? What do you do?
Like everybody else. I mean, I try to hunt areas that are hard to get to. I try to hunt the fringes. I try to get up, try to use creative access to get into places or approach places differently than what other people may. I try to avoid those main veins that a lot of hunters are going to use that are easy to get to. Other than that, you just try to be a turkey. Turkeys are going to be turkeys regardless of whether they're on public or private land. They can't read, postage signs, so they don't know. But they do condition themselves if they have a repeated negative experience at one particular thing. So we try to avoid using whatever everybody else is using. That's when realistic calling can really have a difference. Making sure you use a unique approach, whether that be calling more than everybody else or calling less than everybody else. Everybody usually says, "Oh, it's pressured land. You better not call much. You better just cluck and yelp." But well, yeah, that's so, and it can be very effective, but so can overcalling, because nobody else is really doing that. Everybody's going in there clucking 3 times. Yeah. So we coaches on access, on calling techniques, and aggressive strategies as far as getting in close before we ever make a call. So, you know, there's a lot of different little avenues to kind of up your success on public land, which, I mean, any of that would up your success on any land, really.
Yeah, and, you know, looking at the way y'all call and the different calls, walk me through that. I mean, you got a favorite, a mouth yelper, you on a slate. What do you like most?
We use a little bit of everything, but I'm definitely most comfortable on a mouth yelper. I use it probably 90% of the time and probably 99% in all the videos because I'm typically the one holding the camera, too, so it's really hard to... It's really hard to hold the camera and run a glass call, but or a trumpet or wing bone or whatever. So you hear a lot of the mouth yelpers. But yeah, you know, it's good to have a little bit of an arsenal. I'm not one of these guys that brings a lot of stuff with me. I'm pretty much a minimalist when it comes to when I go into the woods. I'm much more concerned with bringing plenty of water and stuff to fuel me through the day than I am bringing an extra pot call or 19 pegs or something like that. So.
Yeah, and you say what's true for a lot of hunters. I mean, I've got a guy that runs that mouth call a whole bunch, and I, you know, when I finally get back to a truck, I feel like I've been carrying the world on my shoulders, and I realize about there are three mouth calls I used all day, and everything else was just along for the ride. I just carried it around the woods. Something else that I don't see that we talk about on the show too is cover. And you know, a lot of people feel like a guy hunt with a bunch. My co-host on the show is not here this week, but he and I were hunting last weekend. He says, you know, I want to set up on a bird. He said, we got to get this blind out. And I said, he said, I'm going to get the blind out. He said, I feel naked without a blind. And that's just another thing to carry. I watch y'all and you're not carrying a blind. Y'all are kind of blinded up in nature.
Yeah, we don't do blinds, we don't do decoys, we don't do reefing and fans, we don't do any of that. We do turkey hunting, you know, we do one-on-one, you know, us in his house, matching wits, and it's not, and I don't want to get into that whole purist talk, a lot of times that can take you down a really bumpy road, but we do try to do it in a more traditional or simplistic form. And I do that because that's the way I like to hunt turkeys the most. And if I want to kill one, that's the way that I want to kill it because, like I said, I appreciate turkeys and I love turkeys. And I want to make sure when I squeeze the trigger on one and end its life that he's given me every bit of challenge and you know, everything that basically he could offer me, I wanted to make sure I get it out of him before he goes. And the only way I feel like I can do that is if I beat him, you know, without those other tools.
A great take on this. I want to look at something also with the amount of places you hunt. Now, we have an active discussion, you know, going on here in Alabama, and they came up with the Conservation Advisory Board meeting. People are talking about turkey decline. Heck, we've been talking about it on the Camp House porch forever and on this show forever. I say forever, probably the last 10 years. It's been an active conversation. What do you see with the number of places you travel? Or do you think we got an issue with back here? Let's maybe keep it Easterns or Osceolas. Is something going on with the population, you think, or are they just getting smarter, or they're not gobbling? What do you think's going on?
This may be digging a hole
good
for myself to climb out of, but I don't think there's absolutely nothing wrong with our turkey population across the board. I think the population of turkey hunters is changing. I think the population of data collection is changing. I think those grad students and those professors and things conducting the research is changing. I think there's a lot of things changing when it comes to where these numbers are coming from. I think a lot of our collection is a lot more accurate. We were doing a lot more educated guessing before. And I think all of this accuracy is showing a decline because it's more accurate. I think we were maybe overestimating a little bit in past years. And I think a lot of our turkey hunting, just like, you know, sure, you can spin this web as thick as you want to spin it about how, you know, trying to find the work ethic and the ethics in general of the population and of society. I think the turkey hunting population, the turkey hunters is no different. I think a lot of people are looking for instant success. I think they're looking for are quick. All they want is the trophy photo. They're not willing to put in the legwork.
It's an interesting take. So, I mean, your take, and I've heard nobody put it exactly like you did, but it's as much as of a human issue as it is a wild turkey issue.
I'm saying this, or going to those same National Forest roads, or pulling up to their same hunting club gate that they did in 2008, and expecting to hear 10 turkeys like they did in 2008 or 2011, and now they're only hearing 4 turkeys, and they're crying because of the population. Well, if they pick that truck up and drive it another mile down the road where the habitat is comparable to what it was when they hunted their location in 2008, they're going to find those turkeys. The turkeys move to have whatever they need. I do know that the population, you know, turkeys are boom bust, kind of. So there's going to be good years and bad years. And we've had repeated bad hatches due to the wet springs that we're having. I think last year, somehow turkeys had a phenomenal hatch year. I don't know the exacts as far as poultry production, but I can tell you I've seen more jakes so far this spring than I've seen in probably since I've started turkey hunting.
Wow.
I think that 2020, I think all of this, the turkeys are going extinct talk is going to disappear because I think everybody's going to hear plenty of two-year-old turkeys and everybody's going to have a good season and it'll all just fade. So I think there's a lot of little bitty aspects of this old turkey hunting talk that have kind of made a mountain out of a molehill. And here again, this is just one man's opinion that turkey hunts quite a bit. But I have me, myself, other people that are like me that hunt every day of the season, they say the same thing. A lot of the biologists in these areas that I talk to have seen they echo what I think. Yes, predator management definitely helps. But shortening the season help, of course. Of course it's going to give you more turkeys. You're decreasing opportunity, you know. But is that what you really want to do and let your license sales suffer? You know, next thing you know, you're going to be losing public lands because you don't have the license sales to buy new land or maintain right. The land that you have. It's a give and take. I don't think the turkey population is going through anything that it can't rebound on its own. I don't think there's any reason for anybody to panic. Just keep monitoring it and put a few more, maybe a few more safety checks along the way to double check this data that we're getting. I guess I've probably said enough there.
and well said. And it's an interesting discussion, and we'll have to bother you after season and pick it up and have it just talk populations for an hour next time, sometime this summer when we can talk. And you made me happy thinking about that, because the idea of 2020 and a bunch of two-year-old birds out there makes me happy, because two-year-olds make me feel like I'm a good turkey hunter. So, yeah, more of those,
oh,
please.
Man.
More of those, please. They make me feel like I'm Dave Owens. All right, tell folks if they want to follow you online, watch the episodes, check out what you're doing, talk about your social media platforms and YouTube.
Yeah, you can find anything as far as the content that we're pushing out. We're on YouTube. Dave Owens, the Pentote Project, is on YouTube. Mossy Oak even started their own little app for hunting content, and we're on there as well, the Mossy Oak Go app. As far as, we're on Instagram, the Pentote Project, or it's just Pentote Project on Instagram, Facebook, the same deal. You can find us there. Check us out. Let us know. Of course, we got the website. You can snag a hat and T-shirt while you're checking things out if you would like. We're just normal guys. You'll quickly figure out from our content that we're not video producers. We're not videographers. We're not going to baffle you with some crazy high quality footage. We're there about composition, showing you how it really happens and how you can expect it to happen if you plan on jumping out in the
That's for sure, and I wouldn't sell y'all short on the production value, because it's great, but the content is king as always, and it is the best turkey hunting content out there. And for the hats too, I love the T-shirt, but for the hats, I'm going to watch that Instagram when that Bottomland hat comes back up. Please send out another memo, okay? We still have them, okay? Well, you know what, Dave, you with us?
I am. Can you hear me?
Yeah, there. I just lost you for a second. About to wrap up. I was just saying, let us all know when that Pinhoti Project hat in Bottomland gets back in stock, okay?
You got it.
All right. I appreciate it. Thank you so much, Dave. Man, I appreciate you being on the show with us.
Absolutely.
All right. Dave Owens, Pinhoti Project, right here on FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors.